Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Today we're going to be talking about greyhounds and the dog racing industry and what you can do to help greyhounds. And I have to admit, I absolutely cannot look at the face of a greyhound and not smile. There's just something about them that makes me want to go right over and give them a big hug. My listeners will know that the lives of many of these dogs is harsh, and that racing dogs have short careers. April is National Adopt a Greyhound Month, so in a moment we'll be speaking with the leader of the premier greyhound protection group, Grey 2K USA. Later, we will be joined by U.S. Representative Tom Marino from Pennsylvania's 10th Congressional District, along with U.S. Representative Betty Sutton. He has introduced legislation that makes it a federal offense to attend an organized animal fight and imposes additional penalties for taking minors to such events. But first, I am pleased to welcome Christine Dorshak, President and General Counsel of Grey 2K USA. Christine has extensive professional experience in the animal protection movement. Before obtaining her law degree, she worked as Research Director for the New England Anti-Vivisection Society and was the manager of the Ellen Gifford Sheltering Home for Cats in Boston. Formed in March of 2001, Grey 2K USA is a national nonprofit organization dedicated to passing stronger greyhound protection laws and ending the cruelty of dog racing. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thank you so much, Lori. I'm so pleased to be talking to you about my favorite subject, the greyhound.
Oh, thank you for appearing. Christine, it's Adopt a Greyhound Month. Do greyhounds need help finding homes? And are there too many unwanted greyhounds?
Right now, there are thousands of greyhounds who are living in small cages at racetracks all across the country, mostly in the Deep South at this point, because thankfully there have been many, many closures over the past 10 years of racetracks, which we can go into later. But these dogs need homes, and anyone who would like to make the best friend ever can go to our website, grey2kusa.org, hit the Adopt link, and you will see lists of groups from all across the country, all waiting to hear from you, so you can adopt a loving greyhound.
So, Christine, the primary sources of unwanted greyhounds, they come from these tracks?
That's right. Greyhounds at this time are principally bred by the greyhound racing industry. They are reared on farms, kind of like puppy mills for greyhounds. Those that they think are going to make some money are sent on to race at tracks across the country at about the age of 18 months. And they might race for 2 or 3 years, and then that's usually the end of the story for greyhounds. At that point, it's going to be a flip of the coin whether that dog is going to be adopted or that dog is going to be destroyed, because this is an industry that is intentionally pumping out thousands and thousands of dogs a year, knowing full well that we already have a terrible overpopulation problem in this country with homeless
right.
cats and dogs, and there can never be enough homes for these dogs that they are creating
yeah.
just to make money on each year.
Okay, now I want to allow you to make your case that dog racing is cruel and inhumane. A lot of people would say, oh, dogs love to run. What are your objections to dog racing?
Well, speaking from the point of view of the dog, if I were kept in a small cage for an average of 20 hours a day, I sure would love to run if they let me out. And that's what happens when these poor dogs are let out of their cages. You bet, they are thought to be some of the fastest animals on earth, somewhere behind the cheetah, and they love to run because they can run. So that's why it's so cruel to keep them confined as they are by the dog racing industry. Behind every track, there is a kennel compound, a series of small warehouses where dogs are kept in stacked cages, something akin to chicken coops for greyhounds. They live in these cages for hours and hours and hours a day. No toys. They can't interact with other dogs. And usually their bedding is either scraps of carpet or shredded newspaper, easily changed for when it's soiled. And they're let out of those cages a few times a day in groups of boys and girls to relieve themselves in a small turnout pen. and then put back in the cage. And only several times a month are they allowed out to race. Of course, then there's a whole other problem with that. Of course, the dogs love to run. But when they are run in this fashion, you know, a series of dogs lined up, trained to chase the same thing, which is the mechanical lure, they bump into each other, as the industry likes to say. What that actually translates into are broken bones, broken necks, dogs that suffer cardiac arrest, and die while racing. That's the price that they're paying so someone can place a $2 bet on them.
And obviously, not all the dogs that are bred for dog racing make it to dog racing. What happens to those dogs that don't make it to this sport?
Well, the racing industry claims that there's just a natural, you know, death rate, but there's really no explanation for the thousands of dogs that are bred and don't make it to the racetrack. Dogs have to be registered for racing by a certain age, and we find that based on the number of litters that are registered, the number of dogs that end up being sent to race, it just doesn't add up. And the industry's never offered an explanation for this.
Couldn't the industry be reformed and preserved, or must it be ended?
Greyhound racing is cruel and inhumane, and as long as greyhound racing continues, greyhounds will suffer. And I personally am against greyhound suffering. I'm a dog lover, and I want to see this end. I don't think that dogs should be created just so someone can place a bet on them or make money on them. I think dogs should be dogs. And our mission at TKUSA is to simply restore greyhounds to their status as dogs, not money makers, not profit machines, just dogs.
Now, you just described the mission of Grey2KUSA, which is your group that you founded. Why was it formed originally?
Well, I want to say I co-founded it because this isn't a one-woman operation, I can tell you. We are actually a national grassroots organization. We are not something that would be compared to the ASPCA, the Humane Society, which has years and years of action behind it and endowments and so forth. We're a very small grassroots organization, and we depend on everyday people to volunteer and contribute what they can so that we can do the work that we're doing. Since we formed in 2001, myself, Carrie Teal, who is very politically skilled, and Dr. Jill Hoffenbeck, the veterinarian, we were the three that formed Grey2KUSA originally. We were joined by a minister, a teacher, and a greyhound adopter, and we just grew and grew from there. And now we have thousands of people working with us across the country. And what our goal is to simply show people what is happening to greyhounds, show them the state records, show them the records of the tracks themselves, the injuries the dogs suffer, the way that they live, what they're fed. Very poor meat called 4D meat, which is basically diseased downer meat that can't be sold for human consumption. That's what's fed to greyhounds because it's cheap. It's a cheap industry, and it's treating the dogs cheaply. We're against that. So we want to see an end, and we really want people just to look at the industry's own records and make a decision and join us in calling for state governments to prohibit dog racing. And since our formation, 26 tracks have, in fact, closed for live racing, and we've got 22 more to go. So we've done that in 10 years. So we're very hopeful that in the next few years, we will see the complete end to dog racing here in the United States.
And we only have a minute before the break, and after the break, we're going to talk about your involvement in Massachusetts and Florida. You mentioned there's 22 tracks remaining in the United States, is that what you said?
22 tracks in 7 states. When we formed in 2001, there were nearly 50 tracks in 15 states. So we've cut them in half, which we're really happy about. But still, there are thousands of greyhounds right now that need our help. So we've got lots of work to do.
And Christina, there's a handful of other countries still racing dogs, like Australia, New Zealand, and United Kingdom, and Ireland. Is Grey2K involved in these countries as well?
Yes, we are. And I'd love to talk about a particular huge piece of news that we got today. I don't know if you want me to tell you now or after the break, but...
Well, if you could say it in 30 seconds, you can go for it now. Otherwise, we'll wait till after the break.
Okay, well, the big news is that the Irish government has informed the Irish greyhound industry that it will not be allowed to expand to China. It will not be allowed to export its dogs to China and create a whole new industry in another country. And we are so excited about this news.
Fantastic news. That's a great way to end the first segment of Animals Today. You're listening to Animals Today, and I'm talking to Christine Dorshak, President and General Counsel of Grey 2K USA. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the program. We're talking to Christine Dorshak. She is president of Grey 2K USA. We're talking about greyhounds and the racing industry. Christine, I know your group was very instrumental in making dog racing illegal in Massachusetts. Describe the process to us and what was the role of Grey 2K in this process?
Well, we started out as just a group of 10 people who used to hold signs outside the old Wonderland dog track in Revere. And we were a very determined group, but we weren't terribly directed. We found out that we had to learn how to work in the process in order to affect change for greyhounds. And it made us feel good to stand outside with our signs, but it really wasn't helping too many greyhounds. So we actually learned that there was something called the ballot initiative process in Massachusetts. We were encouraged to go on the ballot with a question to prohibit dog racing and shut down that track that we've been standing outside of for 2 or 3 years with our signs. And to make a long, long story short, we brought the question to the ballot in 2000. Our original 10 people became 30 people, and then by the end of the campaign, there were 1,000 people volunteering across the state to bring an end to dog racing, and very enthusiastic, and we believed in everything we were doing and did the best we could. But we got outspent 5-1, and a miracle happened in that we almost won the question anyway. We lost that year by a vote of 51-49. Less than 2% difference, and it was so devastating because we were all so enthusiastic and we worked so hard, and a number of us had actually been sued for millions of dollars for defaming dog racing. That lawsuit was dismissed, thank goodness. We went through a lot, and a number of us, after the fact, said, "Well, we almost won. We should have won. The greyhounds still need our help. Let's keep working." So I brought a question before the group, and I said, "How many of us will stand up and keep fighting?" Two other people stood up, and that was Carrie Teal and Dr. Jill Hoffenbeck, and that's how Grey 2K USA came to be formed. There was, unfortunately, a waiting period to bring another ballot question. So we determined that we would try to end dog racing everywhere. It wasn't just Massachusetts that had the problem. It was, at that time, 15 states. So Grey 2K became Grey 2K USA, and that's how we formed in 2001. We brought our next ballot question in 2006, and by that time I had finished law school. I decided to become a lawyer to help the greyhounds, and specifically to write a ballot question in Massachusetts. So I graduated from law school in 2005, and we brought the question in 2006, or in any case, we tried. The highest court in the state pulled us off the ballot, and we never got to have our day that year. The greyhounds never got to have their day that year. So again, there we are with egg on our face, and a number of us are vegan, so we didn't care for that too much. We said, well, we're going to keep fighting. They can't stop us. So we actually had the courage and audacity and perhaps incredible chutzpah to do it again. We brought the question again, this time in 2008. There wasn't a waiting period because we hadn't made the ballot in 2006. So in 2008, we brought the question. We asked other humane organizations to endorse us, like the MSPCA, the Humane Society of the United States, the ASPCA. And this time they all got behind us to ask their members to please support the Greyhounds. And what do you know? The Greyhounds won in November 2008, and dog racing was prohibited, finally, in the state of Massachusetts. And that old Wonderland dog track that I used to stand outside, that was condemned. So it's a very happy ending for the Greyhounds. And that's really the centerpiece of our work. We are the first organization that has ever successfully shut down an industry through the ballot question process.
Mm. Takes perseverance and, like you said, chutzpah, I'm sure. Christine, is there any evidence that closing down the two dog racing parks in the state of Massachusetts had a negative economic impact, as was predicted by the opponents of the measure?
Well, what was interesting was that when you looked at the real numbers about dog racing, they weren't too good. But that was not something that people were concentrating on. They weren't looking at the real numbers. They were just looking at this idea that it must be bringing in money. We've had it since 1934. It must be an important economic engine. Well, it just wasn't. And what happened was that Dog Track in Rainham became a simulcast outlet. And by accounts from the owner of that facility, he's doing quite well just as a simulcast outlet, and he's now vying for other forms of gambling, which is what he wanted all along. He really, the live dog racing was just something he had to do, something he was required to do by law, and even if he was losing money on it, he had to keep doing it. And that was just the fact of the matter. Now we're finding that dog track owners across the country are reaching out to us saying, hey, can you help us do the same thing, streamline our business? We don't like losing money on live dog racing. Nobody's coming here to watch these races. We'd like to keep the parts of our business that are making money. And we actually are working with track owners in three states right now to do what is called past decoupling language. Decoupling means taking the requirement, the mandate out of law for dog track owners to raise dogs.
And is this the Florida campaign that you're talking about?
Florida, Arizona, and Iowa are the three states where we've been working with track owners to find this happy day for the Greyhounds. And I was just in Arizona a couple of weeks ago, and the measure passed unanimously out of House committee. It's already passed in the Senate, the full Senate. So now we're waiting for the full House vote, which we're hoping to have as early as next week.
And, Christine, we only have about a minute left. So in the last minute, I want you to tell us about the Greyhound breed. Do they need a lot of exercise? Which families tend to do well with them? And all that related to the breed. And how can people listening today help the Greyhounds?
Well, what is surprising about Greyhounds is, though they are fast, they're sprinters. And they do a 30-second sprint, and they're done. They're often referred to as 45-mile-per-hour couch potatoes. So if you would like to have a very calm, friendly dog, good with children, good with older people, please consider adopting a Greyhound. We actually have a question and answer about Greyhound adoption right on our website at greytokusa.org. Just click on Adopt. You can read the Q&A, and I'm sure most of your basic questions would be answered just reading that. But then we have a list of groups all across the country that you can talk to and ask about the particular Greyhounds they have, because some Greyhounds will be cat-friendly, some will not. My Greyhound loves cats. Some are have a high prey drive, so they would not be good around small animals. So it really depends on the dog. And the groups on our website will work with individuals to make sure that they would adopt the right Greyhound for them.
Christine and Dorshak.
Those Greyhounds are waiting, so please, everybody, adopt a Greyhound in April, adopt a Greyhound in May, June. Keep going. So many need homes.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks so much for being on Animals Today. Hey, Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. So on the line, we are very pleased to have U.S. Representative Tom Marino from Pennsylvania. Mr. Marino is co-sponsor of the Animal Fighting Spectator Prohibition Act and is a former federal and state prosecutor. Welcome, Tom.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tom, I thought we'd begin simply by asking you what the problems are surrounding illegal animal fighting that led you to introduce this legislation.
Well, you may know that I was a prosecutor for 18 years. I was a district attorney in Lycoming County, Pennsylvania, and then I was a United States attorney with the Bush administration for about 7 years. And consistently, pretty much so when I was a district attorney, there were violations concerning animals, dog fighting, illegal poaching. But really what got my attention, in addition to the fact that I'm an animal lover, that children were being brought to these dog fighting, cock fighting, you name it, whatever animal they could get to fight or torture. They would these people that I think are sick would try and profit from it. But they bring children and allow spectators to bring children to watch this. And there's no one that can convince me otherwise that watching two dogs, for example, tear each other apart, in fact, kill one or the other, is not going to have a detrimental effect on a child for the rest of his or her life.
Right, right. Absolutely. Can you tell us the specific provisions of the legislation?
Sure. It's H.R. 2492, the Animal Fighting Spectator Prohibition Act of 2011. And we enjoy broad partisan support. There are over 188 members of the House that have signed on to this. And this bill, what is good about this bill, it will apply federal criminal penalties. Most every state has some type of penalty. Whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony pursuant to animal fighting or so-called, and I use this term loosely, games that they call them. The seriousness is so important to me that I think, even though I'm a state's rights guy, we have to apply federal penalties because of we can have consistent authority with the states. This takes nothing away from the states. The states can pursue this however they want to pursue it, whether to charge or not. But the federal government can come in also and say, you know, this is a violation, and then we're going to arrest. And it just simply says anyone who knowingly attends or knowingly brings a minor to these acts of animal cruelty could be and will be prosecuted federally. Penalties will be up to 1 year in prison and fines for attending the fights, and penalties for up to 3 years in prison and higher fines for bringing minors to attend these. We also, on the Senate side, they liked the bill, so they have put something together that pretty much mirrors what my colleagues and I have put together on the House side. So we're going to get this before a hearing in the not-too-distant future, and I'm feeling pretty certain that we're going to get this passed. We're getting great support from federal law enforcement, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, of course, the Humane Society of America, and American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And the Congressional Office Budget has calculated and indicated that this bill will be no cost to the taxpayers.
That's so fantastic, Tom. Now, I also read that in these raids, it's hard to distinguish who are the spectators and who's running the show. Is there any provisions in the legislation that addresses that?
That's right. That's why we put in the legislation, that's why I specifically put in there that the penalties will pertain to individuals who knowingly attend or knowingly brings. So one doesn't have to be the promoter. One does not only have to be the animal owner, but spectators as well. Because, listen, these would not be taking place. These barbaric, torturistic entertainment for these people that I still that are sick, in my opinion, would not be making the money they are making unless spectators were there paying to get in, or sometimes they don't have to pay to get in, but also the people who run these shows have vending stands there. So they're selling their food and their drinks, and of course, betting is going on as well. So simply attending is a crime. Certainly those who are participating will be pursued and prosecuted as vigorously, and but more so even for bringing a child, it gets more severe, the penalty.
Tom, what is the status of the legislation?
It's gaining more bipartisan support, and we expect it to go to hearing before the various committees, several committees have jurisdiction over this. And I'm on Judiciary, which is one that has jurisdiction over it. But we think we're going to get it before the House committees. The Senate's going to be doing the same thing. And we're not seeing any resistance on this whatsoever. So I think it's going to be a quick hearing. I think it's going to be a quick markup, and meaning that after we have the hearing and hear facts, and anyone who wants to come in and testify and give us information is allowed to do that. And then we'll have the markup, meaning that both sides will get together, the House side, and then the Senate side will do the thing on their side, and we'll vote as to whether this legislation should be brought to the floor. We will have discussion about it in the committee hearings. I'm fairly certain that it will pass, and then it goes directly to the floor, and then we'll vote on it some weeks after that.
Tom, isn't it correct that animal fighting is often associated with other illegal activities?
No question about it. We find that particularly in violent crimes, very violent, brutal crimes and murder, somewhere in the perpetrator's history, they have tortured animals in one fashion or another.
Yeah. And gambling, too? Gambling associated? Is there arms exchange as well, or is that
There's no question. Certainly money is a motivating factor here. But as mm-hmm. we find out in any in many forms of illegal gambling, an individual may lose all the cash, and now they're going to start negotiating perhaps drugs or perhaps even weapons that they possess, legally or illegally. But these promoters are in this for the cash. And anything they can do to sell for cash, they will accept that, in my opinion, as well.
Well, I just think it's such a great piece of legislation to hold not only the leaders, but the spectators accountable, because like you mentioned, you mentioned earlier, they are the ones that are supporting these fights. So I think it's fantastic. And of course, bringing kids to this is just insane. So I love everything about this. What can my listeners do to help gain the passage of this legislation into law?
Well, first I want to let the public know, and that my colleague, member of Congress, Betty Sutton, who actually is on the other side of the aisle, supports these things as well. As I said, many people on the other side of the aisle do support these this piece of legislation. But you know what? You need to get out. I'm asking the public and pleading this, and get out and talk to their friends and their neighbors. Let their legislators know at the federal level and at the state level. It doesn't hurt to let your legislators at the state level know that you support this piece of federal legislation. Of course, we in Congress, we're the ones that are going to vote on it. Call your congressmen and your representatives in your area, and call your United States senators and let them know that how passionately you feel about this. Because if anyone, I've had the unfortunate task of viewing videos that have been taken of dog fighting and bird fighting, and it's revolting. It'll turn your stomach. It makes you sick. And what adds to that is watching the so-called thrill that these criminals get out of putting these on and people watching it. And then what really is heartbreaking is to sit there and watch children watch what is going on.
Yeah.
And you can see it in their expression. You can see it on their look that they're sensing something's wrong here. This isn't right. But yet they're forced to sit and watch it.
U.S. Representative Tom Marino from Pennsylvania's 10th Congressional District. Great work, and thank you. And thanks for coming on Animals Today.
You're very welcome. I thank you for getting this message out, and I really appreciate your efforts. And if you need anything from us, please don't hesitate to call me in the future.
Thank you, sir. Don't go away. Peter in the News, up next on Animals Today.
Who let the dogs out?
Hey, Peter.
Hi, Lori. How are you doing?
you picked that bump. I know you did. What's going
on? I like
on?
That.
I do, too. We haven't played that in a long time. What's going on in the news these days?
You know, I wanted to tell you, you know, we're talking about Adopt a Greyhound Month in this month. It's the month of April, right?
Right. April's Adopt a Greyhound Month.
But April is also other causes have April as their month. So I have a little quiz for you.
Uh-oh.
Okay, which of these campaigns is not involved in April Awareness Month?
Okay.
Okay. The National Stress Awareness Month.
Okay.
National Car Care Month, April. National Pet First Aid Awareness Month is April. Or National Financial Literacy Month is April. Which of these is not in April?
National Car Care Month.
Well, no, April is National Car Care Month.
Okay.
I wanted to let you know. In fact, all of them have their April as their national month. So
that was a trick question.
Trick question. Well, okay. But I should also add, it's also National Soft Pretzel Month, April, National Grilled Cheese Month, and National Parkinson's Awareness Month is April. So, in case you were wondering. We want everyone to go adopt a greyhound, but you can go get a soft pretzel
at the same time. And take care of your car.
Take care of
okay.
your car. There's an animal abuse registry bill. We talked about this, putting animal abusers on a registry like sex offenders. Well, that is no longer live in Maryland. That sort of went down to defeat this session.
Oh, too bad.
It was opposed by the Pet Industry Joint Advisory Council. Yes, they thought it would create an excessive burden for the people who had to check the registry. For instance, anyone who sells a pet, they'd be responsible for going to the registry and determining whether the person who was going to buy it was on the registry.
So they're protecting the breeders.
Well, you could infer that it goes down there. But the if you've got a little shop and you're selling dogs, you'd have the responsibility of checking the buyer, and you would face up to a $10,000 fine for failing to do so.
Hmm.
So that's a lot of money if you're a little pet store person.
Okay. No comment here.
So that's lost traction in Maryland. On the other hand, in Erie County, New York, where Buffalo is, there's a new law that's alive, not a law, new legislation that has been introduced, similar thing. Which seems to have more support. The seller of an animal would face up to a $1,000 fine if they sold to an abuser who was on the registry.
Oh, good.
So these things are going to probably be more commonly employed, the animal abuse registries.
I like it.
You like it?
Yep.
Wow. What other registries do you want to have?
Well, would you want to know if your next door neighbor is an animal abuser?
What if you didn't buy a soft pretzel in April? You want to registry for that, too? Where do you draw the line? In Cork, Ireland, right?
Yes.
So you may have seen video of a circus elephant on the loose.
Yeah.
Breaks his shackles. A cute, medium-sized elephant just walking around the car park. Gets onto the street until it was able to be reined in.
How was it reined in?
So the trainers somehow got it. Okay, then. The elephant's fortunately still alive.
Yes.
And so why do you want elephants traveling in circuses so they can travel the... I mean, it was such a risky thing. That elephant could have killed someone.
I know.
Could have gotten shot.
Well,
fortunately, it ended up
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Peter, I saw that on the news, and I quickly turned the channel because I knew it wasn't going to be, or I figured it wasn't because it wasn't going to be a good ending for either a human being or for the elephant.
Yeah.
So I just didn't want to hear about it, and I turned it off.
Well, this didn't end too badly, and the group Animal Rights Action Network held a protest the other day to bring this to everyone's attention. They're an animal rights group in Ireland.
It's bound to happen.
Yes.
Right? You have these traveling circuses. You have these local fairs. You're gonna. It's bound to happen. It's happened before many times.
In Mexico, the Public Administration Commission of Mexico City's Legislative Assembly has approved a ban on bullfighting in the city of Mexico City.
Mm.
So now it goes on to the next step, which is Mexico City's Legislative Assembly for a final vote. So bullfighting may be banned in Mexico City.
Wow.
That would be quite amazing, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it turns out that opposition to bullfighting and bull fiestas in general has increased recently, even in Mexico, where 73% of Mexican nationals state they do not like bullfighting. 73%, right? Also in Colombia, by the way, 78% oppose. And 73.5% of Peruvians are against bullfighting. So we're gonna, we know that in certain parts of Spain it's been discontinued. And bullfighting's already banned in Argentina, Canada, Cuba, Denmark, Italy, and the UK, and many other countries.
Oh, it's so great. It is gaining traction.
Yes.
It's so great.
So in Ohio, let's go back to Ohio then.
Okay.
And there's now new proposed legislation in Ohio, which was very, regarding the exotic animals. It was way behind. It was like one of the only states that didn't have much legislation against owning exotic animals. So there was a legislative hearing where they proposed this stuff, and there's opposition to the new legislation. The new legislation would require private owners to keep their allow them to keep their exotic animals with the following provisions, but they wouldn't be able to get new ones after January 2014 deadline, okay? The owners would have to register their animals, pay fees, obtain insurance ranging up to $1 million, and implant microchips in case of escape. So, and it's a little bit less onerous for the, little less strict for the snake owners. Anyway, the opponents are saying that private owners will not be able to keep their animals per this bill. It's just going to be too much for them to handle. One commenter said the bill is going to either cause the death of my animals or force me to go from a law-abiding citizen to a criminal.
Hmm.
So that's the opposition to this legislation.
Yeah, you know what, though? There should be a way out. I mean, there should be, if the owners don't want to abide by this, there should be some way where they can
get their
exotic pet to a sanctuary or something.
Well, they don't even want to talk about that. They just want their pets on the cheap. They don't want to turn them in.
Right.
So we'll see how strong the legislature in Ohio really is.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Thank you, Peter.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.